Parents want their children to be well-rounded, but the problem that every parent faces is that 7-year-olds would rather watch any video on YouTube than learn how to play the violin. So, how do these concerned parents get their children to be more active? Answer, they force them. Now, forcing your kids into activities isn't a bad thing. In fact, overall, it's extremely helpful. Forcing kids into doing something they don't want to do is the only way we can get them to go to school. Okay, saying that out loud kinda sounded wrong. Doing extra activities, especially at a young age, not only teaches you important skills, but it also teaches you what your interests are. How are you gonna know if you don't like ballet unless you try it? I've tried it, and now I can say with confidence, ballet's not for me. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's had to deal with parents signing you up for sports, instruments, and more sports. I think when you're really young, you don't realize that you have a choice. Your parents just start taking you to soccer practice every Wednesday, and you think, oh, okay, I guess I'm doing this now. But all the activities I was forced into, while I never got invested in any of them, I'm still glad I did them, you know? I forgot how old I was when my mom signed me up for soccer, but I was little enough for the goals to look like this. I can't tell you how many games you won or how many goals I scored. It was probably close to zero. Because I ultimately didn't care about soccer. The only thing I cared about was getting a treat after every game. Because I earned it. I know some kids who really enjoyed playing soccer. I forget which video I mentioned this, but back in the day, there was this kid I knew named Micah. He used to live in the house directly behind mine, and we were on the same Little League soccer team. He was really good at soccer, probably better than I'll ever be, and he still plays to this day. Well, okay, it's been 4 years since I last talked to him, but he was still playing soccer to this 4 years ago. Now, did Micah's parents initially force him into playing soccer? Probably, I didn't ask. But if his parents never forced him into it, he would have never known how good he was at the game and how much he enjoyed it. But that's enough about Micah. This is my channel. I don't remember how I stopped playing soccer. I just stopped showing up to the practices 1 year, and then I never played again. And then my mom put me into Boy Scouts, and that was a lot better because it wasn't competitive and camping is awesome and I made some dumb videos about it. So it was a return investment. Another activity my mom put me in was this martial art class called Aikido. I'm honestly surprised I've gotten 107 videos without mentioning Aikido once. Probably because it was boring and nothing interesting happened. My mom put me and my twin sister into Aikido, and we both agreed that it was boring and we didn't like it, so we decided not to remind my mom whenever she had to take us to class, and surprisingly, she forgot most of the time. Okay, look, whenever the sensei was talking, we had to sit on our knees, and that gets uncomfortable after 2 seconds. What is Aikido, I hear you asking? Aikido is a special form of martial arts in that it doesn't teach you how to fight. Aikido is all about self-defense, and to also not hurt the attacker. You know those self-defense techniques that are like, if someone tries to attack you, use your keys as a knife and stab them. Aikido is not that. An Aikido master will take an attacker's arm, spin them around, and then pin them down to the floor. Now that sounds really cool on rice paper, like if someone goes to attack you, and then you block their punch and pin them to the ground, and you just give them a look like, you wanna take me on, kid? I've already got you pinned down. Now I'm not gonna hurt you, cause I'm that powerful. But if you ever attempt to attack me or my clan ever again, I will be forced to use 10% of my power and break your spine in half. And I think my mom saw that Aikido was non-violent and taught self-defense, and she thought it was a better activity than learning how to kick someone in the face. But after doing some research on Aikido, I've learned that it's not really, what's the right word, respected in the martial art community. There's a lot of people saying that the techniques of Aikido don't work against a real attack, and that if someone's really attacking you, you can't reasonably pin them down without hurting them, so it's probably a better idea to just punch back. And some people who are in Aikido think that their style of fighting is more civil and the more eloquent way of fighting, or non-fighting, so there's a tad bit of elitism in the martial art community. Now, surprisingly, I've never been in a real fight, so I can't really comment on what the more effective martial art is. I'm sure different situations call for different responses, but I don't think I'm wrong when I say that Aikido is the vegans of martial arts. After Aikido, the next thing I was forced to learn was an instrument. My parents didn't force me to do this, it was the American education system that did. In 5th and 6th grade, everyone had to take a band class, and we all chose different instruments to play, and I went with the flute. And as soon as I was given the flute, I traded it with Priscilla, who chose percussion, and that's what I did for the next 2 years. Compared to the rest of the instruments, percussion was very easy on my lungs. And it was okay if we were bad at the instrument, because we were in the very back. The first set of songs we learned was on this metal xylophone thing, but I think the teacher thought everyone was so bad at that instrument that the rest of the songs we learned was on this drum. Just one drum, it looked like this. So while everyone else had to learn face and every good boy deserves fudge and whatever these lines connecting the notes mean, we cool kids in the back only had to memorize three notes. A hit on the drum, a hit on the side of the drum, and not hitting the drum. Now those are my favorite notes. Drums are so great, nothing beats the drums. Drums are easy. So my parents tried to get me to do extra activities, but I never did more than what I was told to do. But that's okay. You should at least try new things, and if it's not something you enjoy, well, at least you tried. Now, with all the activities I did, I still spent plenty of my free time doing some other things. Okay, I played a lot of Neopets and RuneScape, and as much as I enjoyed these games, I would say overall, they didn't make me a more rounded person. Unless you count what they did to my horrible posture. People will spend their free time doing what they enjoy, and entertainment is designed to be entertaining. And while it's good to take some time doing things you enjoy, just like everything in life, it's all about balance. I think there's a very clear and important difference between a hobby and an addiction. If you enjoy playing video games and binging Netflix in your free time, then do that. Keyword being free time. You still need to set time to sleep, work, and socialize, and take showers. If I can smell that you were just binging a show, then that's gotta change. While I was working on this video, I wondered why it was more acceptable to be good at chess than it was World of Warcraft, because at its core, chess and Warcraft are the same thing. A game. But if you spend all your time playing one of these games, and it gets in the way of you being a functional human being, that's when it becomes an addiction. And I would bet you one crisp dollar bill that more people have gotten addicted to Warcraft than chess. And that's why I believe there's a bad stigma with that game. Also, I don't know how WoW works, but I know in chess you need to have at least one friend. If I could go back in time, I would tell my younger self to not play Neopets and RuneScape as much as I did. I would have told me, hey, you should try out other things too, like rollerblading or the flute. Youth is the best time to learn what you love and where your passions lie. You kids have no bills, no expectations, you're not tired all the time, and everyone's telling you to follow your dreams. But not me, I'm 22. My life is practically over. I can't choose any more hobbies. I wasted my childhood. I'm not saying don't play video games or don't watch YouTube. I understand that my main demographic is people who watch YouTube. But like I said before, it's all about the balance. Trademark. So go out there, try new things, join a club, go on a walk, draw something. I'm biased, but make a comic, write a short story, find a recipe online and cook something, or read a book. Take breaks, yes, but never stop learning. And when you're an adult, you can force your children to learn, too. Did you know that 99% of everything I've ever said on this channel has been written out ahead of time, including the mispronunciation of the word percent? It would be 100% scripted, but, you know, the drawing challenge videos, you can't really script that kind of content, so... Or can you? But every other video has had a script, and that includes the worst video I've ever made, my very first one.
So you know those books you make in LA?
I'm gonna stop it right there because I physically cannot watch another nanosecond of my first video. I want to take it down so bad, but I'm keeping it up so you can see how much I've improved. Because like it or not, the very first thing you make of something is going to be bad. But you have to make the bad thing first so you know how to make things good. The point is, even that sad excuse of a video was scripted. And today, I want to talk about what goes on in the script writing process and how I get inspiration and some tips for writing better scripts. Because if I write something I'm not 100% happy with, then I'm stuck working on a crappy video for the next month. Like this one. People often tell me, oh, I want to make YouTube videos, but my life's super boring. I wish I could have an exciting life like yours. And I always respond with, my most popular series is about me talking about working at a minimum wage small local sandwich shop. A script does not need to be an edge of your seat high stakes level story. It needs to be an entertaining story. And I believe if told in a certain way, any story can be an entertaining story. The first piece of advice that I can give that will immediately improve your scripts is, drum roll please, in 5, 4, 3, getting to the point. Because I do animation, the longer the script I make, the longer the video will be, and the longer my team and I will have to spend working on the video and the more depressed I'll get. So I've subconsciously gotten into the habit of writing shorter scripts that get to the point and cut out unnecessary and unfunny details. I feel like the American school system has brainwashed kids into thinking that the best way to express ideas is through the form of a 5-paragraph essay. Now, have you ever read a 5-paragraph essay that you wrote? They're boring as shit, and most schools require essays to have a minimum word count. So we are now training the next generation into purposely writing long-winded and wordy thoughts that could have been shortened down to a sentence. You've all written essays. You know all about repeating ideas you've already written, or saying the same thing over and over, or reiterating thoughts more than once, or echoing points an overabundant amount of times, or looking up words on thesaurus.com to hit that 500 minimum word count before. Well, you may not be ready to hear this, but you will not need to write 5-paragraph essays in your daily life. Shakespeare knew about this when in the 1300s he wrote, "Brevity is the soul of wit." Which is ironic, because he really liked to use a lot of unnecessary words. I once clicked on a video that was titled something like, "Top 10 Scary Things That Have Happened When Hiking" or something. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like a good video to watch at 3 in the morning. And I swear, the video started out like,
"Whether it's to have a healthier lifestyle or to see the great outdoors, hiking is a wonderful activity enjoyed by millions of people across the globe of America. But sometimes, this wonderful activity enjoyed by billions can sometimes turn deadly."
Why are you defining what a hike is? We all know! Just show me the blurry photos of Bigfoot already until I'm too scared to fall asleep! So, how do I come up with these video ideas? Well, I start by thinking, what can I rant about for hours? Something that makes me go, "Don't get me started on blank!" And then I do get started and I write those thoughts on a Google Doc. And sometimes my thoughts are jumbled and incoherent, like I've been up all night watching Bigfoot videos, but I don't care. I just need to get these thoughts out of my head and splattered onto a piece of paper. And sometimes just starting to write will make me think of new ideas and I go, "And another thing!" And I repeat that process until the script's done. And then when I'm done writing the script, it's actually not even close to being done. Once I've finished writing, I send the script off to some of my friends and the Amazing, and they look over it with the freshest of eyes, and they'll give me notes saying, "Hey, you misspelled percent here," or, "Hey, I have a joke you can add," or, "Hey, wait, James, I thought I was your friend." And then I'll choose which of their jokes is the funniest and that I'm going to steal. Here's a fun little YouTuber behind-the-scenes fact. Since 2018, there's a circle of friends I have where we all trade and read each other's scripts and make suggestions and pitch jokes. And once I'm done reading someone else's script, I get to watch their finished video a month or two or 8 months later and see if the jokes I pitched made the cut. And then I get to smile to myself because no one knows that I was the one who wrote that joke, because none of us credit each other, because none of us care. Literally, the last 30 seconds of my Suobway Part 4 video was written by this kid named Infamous Swoosh. I wrote in my script, "Conclusion goes here." And he just wrote one for me, and I went, "Yeah, I'll use that. And not credit you." But it's okay, because we all don't credit each other equally, so it's a win-win. Everyone in the friend circle gets to look funnier than they actually are. Some days, I'll stumble onto a topic that I just know I'm going to make a video about, and then the scripts are a breeze to write. But then there are some days where I'm content with the world and I got nothing that gets me started. But I can't just not make a script that month. Otherwise, what would I make a video about? Random thoughts? I still gotta put bread on the table, and also my team would be out of a job. So on those days, you're basically forcing yourself to be creative on demand, which is not the easiest thing to do. But fortunately, I have a few tricks to get the creative juices flowing. It's called drugs. I'm just kidding. It's called Adderall. Wait. Okay, but for real, I do have this really complicated technique to get ideas, so write these steps down, okay? What I do is I get a pen and a notebook, put on some lo-fi, and just write. About nothing specific, just whatever my brain thinks is important. I am writing right now, with my left hand. Most people are right-handed, but I am special and am left-handed. I'm glad my teachers didn't force me to be right-handed. They were more concerned about my messy handwriting and horrible spelling. Usually the ideas don't come that quickly, but you get what I'm talking about. So many times at conventions, I'll be on a panel and people will ask for advice about starting a YouTube channel, and everyone on the panel will say, "If you want to start a YouTube channel, you just gotta do it. You know, hit the upload button a couple of times." And I feel kind of bad for people who traveled far and wide to a convention and paid for a hotel and waited in line just to hear a bunch of YouTubers say, "You just gotta do it." And it sounds cliche, but it's true. We either say that or be more entertaining, and that's rude, so. Recently, I went on tour performing a live show called Scribble Showdown. I'll talk more about it in the next video, don't worry. And before every show, we had a Q&A panel, and the most frequent question we got asked was, "Can you read my screenplay?" and "How do you get motivation?" And the answer to that question is no, and you don't. You get disciplined. Discipline comes before motivation. If you have a project you want to start or a skill you want to learn, you can't wait around for motivation to hit. Sometimes it doesn't come. Instead, you have to set a schedule where you say, "Okay, on this day, from this time to this time, I'm going to put in the effort to achieve my goal." And if you don't know where to start, a good first step would be to just get your goals into writing. Get your thoughts out onto something physical. So grab a pen and a piece of paper and just ask your friends to read your screenplay because I'm too busy. So busy that I didn't even have time to record an end card.
Quick, what do we know about goats?
They stiffen up and fall over when they're scared?
Good, what else?
Oh, I know! Their kids have the same name as our kids. Which is kids.
Yeah, that does open the door for some pretty hilarious puns.
Anything else? Yes, you in the back?
You don't want to stare into their eyes for too long.
Well, class, I'll admit, you do know a bit about goats, but you're all forgetting the most iconic goat fact of all. You know,
their goats scream.
Anyone who's anyone who knows anything about goats know that these rectangle-eyed demons make weird human-sounding screams. And we all find these little freaks of nature so funny that screaming goats get referenced in all sorts of media, like commercials and movies, and are still getting referenced as recently as 2024. So why then did Peter Griffin call this a sheep?
Sorry, guys. Somebody emailed me a video of a sheep screaming.
Now that I think about it, Conan O'Brien called this a sheep, too.
There's a viral video going around of a sheep. This is real.
And if this really is a goat, why is the original video called The Screaming Sheep?
And I've never, ever in my life seen a sheep or met a sheep that sounds like this.
Take a good look, because this is the face that will haunt your dreams.
What did you see?
Lamb. They were screaming.
That was the worst Super Bowl call in the history.
Sorry to burst the bubble, children.
People are saying it's fake and that it's dubbed over.
It's good.
This is real.
Chapter 1. Why did we all think this was a goat? This has to be like one of them Mandela effects, right? You're telling me this unedited 6-second video that shaped an entire generation's perception of what the common barn animal goats scream like wasn't even a f***ing goat? Someone's been pulling the wool over all of our eyes. Or maybe the original poster is deceptive and untrustworthy, and this really is a goat.
Hey, I'm not gonna stand for you questioning the integrity of the original poster. They would never lie to us.
Okay, let's see. All the other videos on their channel are of sheep. In fact, it's only sheep. I can't even find one stinking goat on this whole stinking farm. And if we get real investigative and use an internet archive, we can clearly see that the video was always called The Screaming Sheep. But I'm positive it's screaming goats we love so much, because if you type screaming goats into Amazon, you get all of the screaming goat merch, and if you type screaming sheep, you get all of the screaming goat merch. And, just because I have another example, in the Shaun the Sheep movie, they had a whole farm of sheep that any one of could have screamed, but it's the one and only goat character that goes... Granted, the sheep in the original video was just recently sheared, so I understand that it doesn't immediately give "this is a sheep" vibes, but were Peter Griffin and Conan O'Brien really the only ones who read the title while the rest of us collectively thought, I think I know what a goat sounds like, and that is definitely a goat. How did we get from a 6-second video of a screaming sheep to all these goats? Chapter 2.
the beginning. According to this Google Trends graph, from 2005 to 2008, no one gave a shit about screaming goats. And that makes sense. No one knew they could do that. But then, just at the start of the 2008 housing market crash, we see a little bump. I believe this is because videos of animals making unexpected sounds was kind of the thing back then. Videos like Man Goat and Man Argues with Spitting Goat made the rounds from 2008 to 2011, but their success kind of stayed on the internet, you know? Like, they were funny videos, but nothing I'd make a commercial about. 2012 rolled around, and people were done with screaming goats. But one user still had hope that, in time, people would once again care about screaming hooved animals. On the 8th of April, 2012, while everyone was enjoying a nice Easter Sunday on the Screaming Sheep Farms, the YouTube user AJQ2891 captured the exact moment that their recently sheared Oxford sheep Ophelia let out a humorous and completely genuine scream. Then, for the rest of the day, they painted eggs or something, I don't know. But then, on the very next day, AJ posted the video for the entire world to witness Ophelia's monumental sheep scream. And almost overnight, the video would be seen by no one. And it would stay that way for the next 5 months, until one day when the video would fall upon the eyes of a Redditor. And baby, I'm low on karma. Ophelia's video got posted on Reddit, and then reposted on Reddit, and then seemingly overnight, Ophelia the Screaming Sheep went viral. Ophelia was so beloved that she found herself off the internet too, on places like Conan and this British show RudeTube that I couldn't find clips for because I'm not British. With Screaming Sheep being the next viral sensation, AJQ quickly ran out to the farm, recorded another hilarious scream of Ophelia, and managed to record some of their screaming lambs. Guess that's why it's called the Screaming Sheep Farms. You know, just every animal here has a weird, unnatural scream. Honestly, it's a nightmare to live here. Also, we know it's Ophelia who stars in the Screaming Sheep 2 because we can see she's wearing the same ear tags in both videos. That, and she screams, like, identically in both videos. But that makes sense. You know, it's the same sheep, so of course it's going to sound the same. You know how consistent a sheep's screams are these days. We're not really going to be looking a whole lot at these two videos, but they're going to be important later on, so just keep them in the back of your mind. Things were looking great for our girl. She was beloved by millions of people who all found joy in listening to the soothing sounds of her completely genuine sheep scream. Chapter 3. Seriously, why did we all think this was a goat? I wasn't able to find the original Reddit post that exploded Ophelia into stardom, but we do know a Reddit post did exist because it was mentioned in the Screaming Sheep NFT description. Okay. Apparently, a lot of old viral videos are now non-fungible tokens. I don't really want to get into that right now. If we instead just shift our focus to the NFT's description, we find a lot of useful information. Like, this is the only place I've found where we learn Ophelia's real name. I'm hoping it's accurate. Now, this might just be how I read things, but when I read, "This is Ophelia. I filmed the Screaming Sheep Easter morning," I was under the impression Ophelia was the name of the person recording, AJQ. Luckily, we have the Screaming Sheep 2's NFT description to clear things up. See, I told you those videos are going to be important later on. Ophelia, the sheep featured in the original, is also the star of this video. Oh, I get it now. This is Ophelia. Like you're pointing at her. This is Ophelia. Hi, Ophelia. Anyways, getting back to that uncredited Reddit post, I was able to find this Reddit post from September 7th, 2012, but I have reasons to believe it still wasn't the Reddit post. However, this post does give us some valuable insight into what a viral Ophelia Reddit post may have looked like. Already, there were a surprising amount of people who were commenting things like, "Oh, take my upvote, kind stranger. Hey, you know what this video reminds me of? A different screaming goat video!" Since there had already been a precedent of goats being the common barn animal that made weird, unnatural screams, and because Ophelia had the most goat-looking haircut that day, that if someone told you, "This is a goat," you would believe them unquestionably, because why would someone lie about that? Turns out, people lied about it.
Ophelia's video was featured in multiple and extremely popular Goat Screaming Like People compilations. And I can't really blame the people who made these compilations because they couldn't make a whole separate Sheep Scream Like People compilation. I've only found one other video of a sheep screaming that wasn't on AJQ's channel, and that's not enough to make a whole compilation. Misinformation about Ophelia's species was rampant. No one had an NFT description to fact check because, honestly, the concept of that is kind of insane. They just had to trust reputable news sources like Anderson Cooper to get his facts right. And even he couldn't do that!
Now, I've seen a lot of creepy goats on YouTube, like this one.
Chapter 4. I Knew You Were Trouble. In February 2013, the YouTube user Goosick had the brilliant idea of editing Ophelia's scream over a popular Taylor Swift song. Huh, don't you wish you thought of something like that, AJQ? Replacing the audio of something with a goofier and unexpected sound? People are so creative. I wish I could show you the specific edit that I'm talking about, but I know Miss Swift won't like it if I play even a second of her song, so we're just gonna have to do this. Never mind, I don't want to do this. I'm just going to assume you've already seen the edit that I'm talking about because it was viewed by everyone. Everyone saw this edit. Taylor Swift saw this edit. And she liked it.
It's good.
I know I don't usually tell stories about my personal life, but if you'll allow me this one time, I remember one night in 2013 being at a high school dance, and the Taylor Swift Goat song came on, and right when the beat dropped, all the teachers supervising hadn't a clue why the entire school screamed. It was because we were all mimicking that hilarious screaming sheep. Now, the issue with all of this is that Goosick titled their video, "I Knew You Were a Goat When You Walked In." So history's changed forever. February 2013 was the start of the screaming goat meme. During this time, there were plenty of real videos of real goats making real screams that were also shared and beloved by people. But there's no denying that Ophelia's scream was the goat of goat screams. And she's not even a goat! YouTubers react to goat remixes! Commercials featuring screaming goats! Hey, what animal did they get in YouTube Rewind 2013 to scream? Oh, that's right, it was the goat. As much as AJQ tried to remind people of Ophelia's species in the description, the damage was already done, and the meme had gone completely out of their control. You might think that, like any other meme, people would have their fun with it, but eventually they'd move on. But that didn't happen with this particular meme. No, Ophelia's goat scream was about to find a new home in Hollywood. In November 2014, something happened that caused people's interest in screaming goats to massively spike up. And I have no clue what caused that. I don't know. It's one of those unsolvable mysteries, I suppose. Look, in all of my research, I couldn't find anything significant that would have caused this massive spike. So think back. Did you ever use Google to search for screaming goats in November 2014? And if so, why? But while we're looking at the Google Trends graph, only 3 months later, we see another bigger peak in interest at February 2015. I think I know what caused that. If I had to pick the most important date in screaming goat history, February 1st, 2015, would be like in the top five. Solid A tier for sure. On that specific Sunday, three different companies all released commercials referencing screaming goats. How did I know it was Sunday? Because it was Super Bowl Sunday, baby! You know, the season finale of football that gets around 114 million viewers? It's such an important football game that companies will pay top dollar for a couple seconds of ad space. And the 2015 Super Bowl, Super Bowl Xlix, aired two screaming goat commercials. One of them just using the original clip of Ophelia, which I'm still counting as a screaming goat commercial because the iSpot.tv page for this ad credits Ophelia as a goat. And that third non-Super Bowl commercial was just part of a Geico campaign, and they played a different ad from that campaign at the Super Bowl, but could you imagine if they played the goat one instead? That would have been so cool. Now, a new and bigger audience of people People who watch sports all believe that goats are the ones who scream like that. The reason this Super Bowl is so important to the Screaming Goat historian community is because this was the game that every animation studio executive watched and simultaneously agreed that Screaming Goats were the funniest, freshest thing ever. Think about it. You're an animation studio executive. You see two Screaming Goat commercials during the same football game. A couple days later, you see a third Screaming Goat commercial. Hey, isn't it almost Chinese New Year? What animal is it this time? Oh, that would be the year of the goat! Within the next three-ish years, Screaming Goats were referenced in animated movies at a rate I've never seen memes get referenced in animated movies before. You couldn't escape Screaming Goats if you tried. Thor 4 beat you over the head with them, and they might be in Marvel Rivals, but I couldn't get these goats to scream when I played.
Come on, scream! Scream!
My theory is that people complained about it, so they took it out. But now I'm going to complain about it for them to put it back in. And it really gets my goat that goats are remembered as the common barn animal who make that iconic scream. And it's unfair that calling someone a goat is a compliment, but calling someone a sheep is an insult. Goats have already taken enough from sheep. I need to calm down. So, what do you say, Ophelia? Think you can belt one more out for us? For old time's sake? Come on, girl. Do the scream!
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah.
Stop that.
Yeah.
Ophelia, why aren't you screaming? You were the one who screamed in the original video, right?
Yeah.
Chapter 6, working title, Deception. I'm not proud to admit this, but sometimes I'll watch a video at 2x speed. You know, like an iPad kid. But then YouTube will remember I did that and think I want to watch every video that fast. So it wasn't that jarring when I pulled up the original video and noticed Ophelia was obviously sped up. It only became jarring when I realized the video was playing at the normal speed. I caught this on, like, my 40th rewatch, but this is clearly sped up, right? I didn't do anything to this. This is how the clip has always been. So that means, at some point, this video was put into a video editing software and underwent video manipulation. But that doesn't automatically mean Ophelia didn't hilariously scream. AJ just wanted us to hear the scream sooner. That's why they sped up the footage. And, okay, I will admit that it is a little weird that at the start of the video we can hear the background noises like the wind and other farm animals. But when Ophelia starts screaming, everything kind of just cuts out. But that's probably just because Ophelia screamed so loudly that it drowned out all the background noise. I don't know what a spectrogram is, and alright, I do find it intriguing that Ophelia's scream sounds identical to the scream this cartoon fox made in the short film Pop by Bernard Dairyman. That came out 2 years before AJ's video. But maybe Bernard just used a recording of his own Oxford sheep. You know how similar a sheep's screams are these days. I, for one, would never accuse AJQ of faking this important piece of history that has brought joy to millions of— What's that? They already found the source of the original scream? Stock sound effect from Apple released in 2008? Yeah, can I call you back? So that means it was never a screaming goat. It's always been a silent sheep. A classic example of a lie within a lie. I, of course, was not the first person to crack this case. People were suspicious of Ophelia's authenticity within the first 5 YouTube comments. No, the diligent internet detective who cracked this case and found the original scream was none other than—
Well, I'm sorry to burst the bubble, children, but those are sound effects.
So now he's involved in all of this. He's gonna need his own page on the wiki. If this is how you found out that one screaming goat video from 2012 is fake, I'm sorry. I know getting lied to is upsetting, but try imagining what it would feel like if everyone thought you were a goat when really you were a sheep. You know what else is fake? most of the things on the internet. But you know what's not fake? The smiles Ophelia gave you. If AJQ told us from the very beginning that the video was edited, why can't I say that? Would we have even listened to them? We didn't listen the whole time they told us Ophelia was a sheep! I don't think I could sum up my thoughts any better than the YouTube user Just Bored puts it. No sh**'s fake. This is just supposed to be funny. So, the next time you inevitably see a screaming goat referenced in an animated movie, I hope you cringe, not because the joke isn't funny, but because you know it was never a goat that made that sound, but rather a sheep that also never made that sound.
Chapter 7. Other things I wanted to mention but couldn't find a good spot for them, so I'm just going to list them off while opening Screaming Goat merch. In YouTube Rewind 2013, they got goats to reference Ophelia's sheep scream, but they also had a goat make this sound, which is referencing a different viral video called Yeah Lamb.
Yeah.
So in YouTube Rewind 2013, they had goats steal the spotlight from not only sheep, but also lambs. You're how old? Oh my god, moves. The very first screaming goat reference in media I could find was on May 9th, 2015 from episode 25 of Sonic Boom. In case you needed an emergency goat. Ooh, what's in my hand? And then there's also this one. Have you ever made this sound? We have the screaming goat button. That needs batteries. Wait, no, I just need to pull this. That was anticlimactic. Oh, wait, I need to turn it on. Okay, now...
Star, can you do the honors?
The Screaming Sheep 1 NFT was sold at 2.9 Ethereum, which I believed influenced AJQ to sell the Screaming Sheep 2 NFT at 10 times the price, starting the bid at 29 Ethereum. And if you think it's crazy, someone would pay 10 times the amount for I can't read the card. If you think it's crazy that someone would spend 10 times as much on a sequel to a viral video, then you're absolutely right, because no one bought the NFT. Except for right now, you're looking at the proud owner of the Screaming Sheep 2 and I'm just kidding, I didn't do that. I said screening. I'm here with Scout, the mother of Star from Party Goats LA. Have you heard of a goat make that sound before?
I have heard something similar, like if they're in distress, especially if they get left alone. Mm-hmm. Here's a fun fact for you. The way you can tell the difference between a goat and a sheep is actually by looking at their upper lip. Ooh. Goat's upper lip is not split. The sheep's upper lip is split, and that helps them eat grasses. And it's actually called the philtrum, but goats don't have it. So if you ever have a question, just look at their upper lip, and if it's split and it looks like it's just kind of a cleft right there, right under their nose, that's how you can tell the difference.
Star, what do you think?
We are Party Goats LA. We do all kinds of things, everything goat and sheep related here in Los Angeles. We do brush clearance, parties, events, send a surprise goat with our goat gram, goat yoga, hiking with goats, pretty much anything people want to do.
Hey. Thanks for watching this video. Big thanks to everyone who worked on this video and made it possible. They're amazing. And you're amazing. And now you're off into the world, knowing that it was never a goat that made that sound. So, you know, take with that with what you will. See you around. Wear your seatbelt. Love yourself. Have a good night.
Hey there, Frederick. What you doing? Oh, hello, brother of mine. Why, I'm just studying for a math test tomorrow. That's pretty neat, Frederick. Braxton, brother, shouldn't you also be studying for the test? Well, you see, Frederick, due to my high levels of apathy and the stress of knowing that I'll never be good at math, I've decided to completely give up on even trying to do good on the test. So, what are you gonna do instead? Oh, I'm just gonna go watch some YouTube videos. School sucks! Especially math! Ugh! When will I ever use geometry / trigonometry / calculus in the real world? I think you're only saying that because you're bad at geometry / trigonometry / calculus. Why is everyone so quick to hate on math? Math is easy. How many essays did you have to write for math class? Oh, that's right. E to the I pi plus 1. Which is 0. One thing I would change about math class is I think it's dumb that you have to show your work. Ugh! Do you know how much harder it is to cheat when you have to show your work? Dear math, solve your own problems, tweeted MatPat. I hate Matt, replied Protato Gamer. Hey, that's not very nice of you, Prote. All I did was tweet about math.
Maybe what you really hate is spelling. Or maybe you really do hate MatPat.
Well, two can play at this game. When will I ever need to know about the themes and symbolisms in To Kill a Mockingbird when I go into the real world? That's right, never! You don't need to know anything to be in the real world.
Okay, I think we can all agree that a lot of what school teaches you isn't that important. And there's definitely more important things schools could be teaching you, like taxes or how to pick a good president. But I'm not the one who makes the curriculum, so why am I even talking about it?
Regardless of how broken your education system is, you should always stay in school, kids. Right, Dave?
I was a good student in school, not counting college. And look how I turned out. I'm not using everything I learned in school almost every day. Sure, you'll probably never need to know that much about Shakespeare's plays. But hey, now you know how to read old-timey complicated books. And no, you'll probably never have to find the area under a curve ever. But now you can say that you can. And isn't that what life's all about?
So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my school stories.
What do you mean Jaden already made a video on school stories?
Did she call them school stories?
I already stole from her like 2 videos ago.
Okay, just, I'll think of something.
So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my academy anecdotes. So you know how guys can pee standing up? It's amazing. Ladies, if you've never peed standing up, then you're missing out. But there are some rules that apply with having the superpower. Like, don't go to a urinal right next to another guy unless it's absolutely necessary. Or, if the urinals don't have a divider, then everyone can all agree to keep your eyes and mind straight. These rules have been taught to us at a very young age. By the time we were in elementary school, we were all pros at peeing. Except for some of us when we were asleep. But that's not important. So at this point in life, we all should have known what we were doing. But there is this one kid who I guess no one ever taught him how to pee correctly. This kid, I'm not going to say his race because it doesn't matter, but when he went to the bathroom, he would pull his pants and underwear all the way down to the ground. Some of the ladies watching this might be thinking, wait, is that not how guys pee? Ladies, you'll just have to trust me on this, but that is the most wrong way a person can pee. The first time I saw the kid doing this was when I was in the urinal right next to him.
Pee faster!
As us two bros were peeing, a third bro walked into the bathroom, saw this kid's bottom, and just went, ooh, and walked out of the bathroom. I wish I could have done the same. How do you tell someone, hey man, when you pee like that, everyone can see your butt. So just, here, let me show you how to do it. I don't know what happened to that kid, but I think he would agree with me that math is easy. He was Asian. When I was little, I had a very weird sense of humor. So in the 5th grade, there was this girl I'd known for a long time. We weren't strangers or anything. And one day I said to her, you have 2 big blue zits right there. And I pointed at her eyes. I was talking about her eyes. I called her eyes zits. Get it? She, immediately slapped me. Probably because the joke was so awful. And that was the first time I ever got slapped by someone who wasn't a family member. And yes, it was Priscilla, the girl I sat next to in the cardboard boat video. She claims that the slap was an accident and that she was just trying to fake slap me to scare me. But I think she was really just self-conscious about her eyesits. One time, my 6th grade teacher, who was the same height as all of us, threw a stapler across the room because we wouldn't stop talking. Here's an anecdote about the first time I got detention, and it isn't that exciting. I was in the 7th grade and our class was at a computer lab. And the kid sitting next to me, his race doesn't matter, so I'm not going to say it, Asian, kept changing the computer wallpapers to cats and he kept showing me. To be fair, I thought what he was doing was hilarious. Then I asked him, can you change the background to Chuck Norris? That just goes to show you how long ago this story took place. He showed me what he did, I laughed, but then the teacher said, who's changing the wallpapers? She was able to see everyone's screens from her computer, and the kid said, me and James were.
Dude, don't bring me into this! You were the one changing the wallpapers! I mean, I was involved a little, but don't drag me down with you!
We ended up getting detention, except my school didn't call it detention, they called it CARE, which I'm sure was an acronym for something. If it wasn't an acronym, that would have been a weird thing to call detention. Let's just say it stood for kids are really extra. The whole time I was in CARE, I kept thinking in my head, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry! If they see you cry, you might as well move to China! And that was the only time I got detention. Except it wasn't called detention. So I still have a clean record. All right, here's the last anecdote. This one happened when I was in the 11th grade. I was in an AP US history class, and I had it for a 0 hour. So that meant I was at the class before school even started, and I was way too tired to learn about presidents. I was sitting in class when all of a sudden I sneezed very loudly. And it was an above average sneeze. Like one of those sneezes where you had to lean into it. And after I sneezed, this kid near me said, "Hey yo, Mr. Teacher, can we get some tissues? This boy's got a bloody nose." And I thought, oh shoot, I do? Well, that sneeze was pretty violent, and I did pick my nose a few minutes ago. And then the teacher looked right at me and said, "Oh yeah, you can just go to the bathroom." So I got up, and as I was walking to the door, I felt my face and realized, wait a minute, I don't have a bloody nose. I turned around, and there was a kid who actually did have a bloody nose walking towards me. I'm not gonna say the race of the kid because it doesn't matter. Canadian, but I was in a pretty awkward situation. So I punched myself until I actually did get a bloody nose. Nah, I'm just kidding. What I really did was I said out loud, "I have to go to the bathroom too." And then I left. I didn't really have to go to the bathroom. I didn't want to see another exposed butt anyway, so I just waited outside awkwardly for a long time. I got an A in that class, by the way, if you were wondering. I still don't use anything I learned in that class. If you're one of those kids that spends too much time on that darn computer machine, then conventions are a great place to get the recommended amount of human interaction with others who share a similar interest. Or at least, they were. You might have seen some conventions in the news recently, you know, the ones like VidCon, Comic-Con, and E3. But did you know there's conventions for all sorts of different things, like coin collecting, pens, and degenerates? The first convention I ever went to was in Arizona called Phoenix Comic-Con. I was 16 years old, and it, no exaggeration, changed my life. I had heard a lot about geek culture online, but Phoenix Comic-Con was the very first time I witnessed it in its fullest. I was a very sheltered kid. It was the first time I'd seen a brony and a furry and whatever this is in the wild. That changes a person. I was told that it was not cool to like geeky things, and as a 16-year-old, I tried really hard to make it seem like I didn't secretly like a bunch of geeky things. But people at Comic-Con just embraced nerd culture, like they didn't care what people thought of them or something. Is that allowed? I guess when I was 16, I was hyper-desperate to receive everyone's approval. I was so hyper-desperate that while walking around my first convention, I was stressing out that I wasn't in cosplay. Oh, all these pop culture characters are judging me because I'm not wearing any makeup. To this day, I still haven't ever cosplayed, but it looks like a lot of fun. If I did cosplay, I would want to go as this quadrupedic horse. Also Spark from Pokemon Go. I went to one panel called How to Make Steampunk Weapons, but instead of teaching us how to weld real-life weapons powered by steam, the people on the panel taught us how to paint Nerf guns to make them look like they were powered by steam. And that was, no exaggeration, the most disappointing panel I've ever been to. There was also a panel for bronies, but I was too chicken to go. Did I mention that my grandfather, who I'm named after, got drafted into World War II when he was 18? He fought in a war so I could go to a comic convention and be too nervous to talk to bronies. What a different life we had. At most conventions, people in the expo hall will sell a lot of super cool, unlicensed merchandise. Yeah, a lot of artists will sell prints and plushies and oven mitts with characters and titles they probably didn't get the license to sell, but if it's at a convention or on Etsy, then for some reason it's okay. I've always felt weird about buying that type of merch. On one hand, you shouldn't be allowed to make money off of someone else's intellectual property without the owner's consent. But on the other hand, look at this cool Bowser wallet, Bowser print, and Bowser bandana that I own. And this body pillow. It's a moral gray area because the people buying this type of merch are the hardcore fans. They know of the property these characters came from. They probably already own licensed merch of the character. The artist isn't claiming to have created the character either. It's a mutual understanding between buyer and seller that we both think Bowser is cool and we just want to buy as much merch as possible. You kind of have to take it on a case-by-case basis, but let me just say this to get it out there. You're not allowed to sell bootleg Got Ones Out merch. Phoenix Comic-Con actually had to change the name of their convention to Phoenix Fan Fusion because the people at the San Diego Comic-Con didn't like that Phoenix was stealing their name. So these conventions that don't care about stealing other people's copyright are forcing others to respect their copyright. Interesting. As some of you may know, since 2012, I have become a little more successful. And in 2019, I got invited to be a guest at Phoenix Fan Fusion, which is my home convention. The really crazy part is the convention put me in the celebrity line, like next to the people where you have to pay for photos and autographs. I didn't charge my fans for anything, so that made my line appear a lot longer than others. And my line was, no exaggeration, right next to Jeff Goldblum's line. I was gonna make eye contact with Jeff Goldblum!
Jeff showed up for a couple hours on Saturday, and when he came out from backstage, everyone in his line and my line started wooing and clapping, and even I was like, woo! And then Jeff took a look at my line, then looked at me, and then gave me a nod of approval, saying, not bad, kid. He didn't say it out loud, but I could tell he said it with his eyes. He also said that I looked kind of cute, so oh, thanks, Jeff. The first time I went to VidCon, that also, no exaggeration, changed my life. Again, it was the first time I met all these YouTubers that I've been watching for years, and okay, I'll admit, at first I was kind of fanboy-y, but I've gotten completely desensitized meeting other YouTubers and feel no joy anymore. When I meet another YouTuber, I say, oh, you make videos in your bedroom? Me too. People know that you're a bedwetter too, right? No? That's just me then. If you've ever given me something at a convention, then you'll be happy to know that I've kept everything I've ever been given. Unless you're the guy that gave me a plastic baggie full of water and other junk and called it a homemade snow globe. I used to collect snow globes, so it was a nice sentiment, but I didn't want to take it home with me and have it inevitably break and get all the important fan art wet. So I chucked it. And as I'm telling you this, there's some poor kid out there going, hey, he's talking about my snow globe. He threw it away? And now I feel bad, so...
Here, I'll mail this to you, and you can get a taste of your own medicine.
I don't know why this is such a popular question, but a lot of times people will ask me, what's the weirdest fan interaction you've ever had? I think they think that some of you are cringy. I never have an answer for them because all my fans are super nice. Yeah, someone gave me a bag of water, but that's not weird, that's nice! Okay, I have received fan mail from a prison, which is true, so I guess some of you aren't law-abiding citizens. Going to conventions and meeting fans and being on panels is a lot of fun, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't give you a lot of time to really experience the convention. Since 2017, when I would go to a convention, it would mean I was working. I still had a fun time, but I didn't really get to just relax with friends. That is, until I went to a convention last December called MFF, which stands for Midwest Fur Fest. Now, James, did you go to a furry convention? Well, I went with some friends to a furry convention so that I could actually enjoy a convention and not have to work. Although I still got recognized even though I was wearing a disguise. Furries are very touchy people, I've learned. Not touchy as in overly sensitive. Well, some probably are. But they're also literally touchy. Let me tell you where I'm at in my life right now. Last December, I was in an elevator full of furries and... if my grandpa could see me now, he would probably be frowning. Or smiling, I don't know, I don't judge. We were all crowded in, there was a moose breathing down my neck, and we stopped at a floor because more furries wanted to come in. So I backed up to make more room, but I backed up a little too close to the moose, and he grabbed my hips and I went, ah! In my mind, I didn't say it out loud. In real life, I went, So that was probably the weirdest fan experience I've had, if you were still wondering. I don't know if he was a fan of my YouTube, but he was definitely a fan of my body. Or he was drunk. I don't know. Again, I don't judge. I was debating on whether or not I should include this story, but I think it would be a good lesson for everyone to hear. Here's my James PSA. This message is for everyone, and especially furries. Don't touch people without their permission. In the moment, I stayed quiet, but that sort of behavior isn't okay, and I should have spoken out. Hopefully, most of you are mindful of other people's personal space. However, comma, at least one of you went to prison, so... I don't know. Overall, it was the best ironic trip ever. At the end of the day, conventions are a lot of fun, and I really, really miss going to them. And when it's safe to do so again, I recommend you try and go to one you're interested in. And Grandpa, I'm sorry if I disappointed you.
Hey, if you're watching this and it's late at night and you have school tomorrow, I'm sorry. Top 10 things that keep me awake at night. Number 10, eating all those sugary snacks before my bedtime. My blood sugar goes through the roof. Sorry, I just can't help myself. I love a good cookie dipped in hot chocolate. Number 9, death and existentialism. Just the thought that one day me and everyone I love will die, and in just 500 years, no one is going to remember me. So what's the point of doing anything? In the grand scheme of the universe, do I even matter? Unless the internet's still around by then. Thumbs up if you're watching this in the year 2516. And also, don't forget me.
Number 8, my dogs! My dogs just love to sleep on my bed every night. And you see, I sleep on a twin-size bed, which is a stupid name for a bed that can fit one person. And I'm actually a twin, so I'm allowed to sleep on those. And I'm not on the below-average side of the height spectrum, so I cover about 110% of the bed. And if me and my dogs are both cognitive enough to plan something out, maybe we could set up a system. I mean, they're pretty small dogs. I did the math. They should be able to fit. But my dogs have found that the most comfortable part of the bed is right dead center in the middle. So I just gotta finagle my way into a comfortable position, and if the dog leans up against you or sits on your leg, then you're obligated by dog law not to move, because you might disturb the dog, and you love them too much to do that. And my bed is right next to a window, so I sometimes open the blinds so they can look outside, and so they're both right next to my face. But then in the morning, if there's another person or, God forbid, another dog outside, then... Jeez, that was a long one. I just like talking about dogs. Number 7, there are as many creatures on your body as there are people on Earth. And you don't want to even know how many are living on your bed right now. Now, is this true? I don't know. I just saw it on one of those fun fact websites. Not too fun of a fact, I think. But not knowing whether or not it's true is even scarier. That means there are probably microorganisms dying on you every second. At least 12 of them have died on you since you started watching this video. But chances are that some of them are probably doing it on your kneecaps, on your eyelashes. Microorganism, more like micro-orgasm. Now, there's two ways you can look at this. One being that there's so many tiny creatures living on me, and no matter how hard I scrub, I'll never be clean. Or, you're never alone. Every night when you hop into that empty bed of yours, you're sleeping with billions of microorganisms. You slut. Number 6, they never caught the Zodiac Killer. I know he was around in the 70s, but if he was in his 20s in the 70s, that means he's only in his late 60s, early 70s right now. He can still be out there. Who knows what he could be doing? Maybe even failing at running for president. Ugh. And also, according to some conspiracy theories, they never caught John Wilkes Booth. Maybe Booth wants to get revenge. Maybe he's had enough and now he wants to run for president. Number 5, fractals. What are those, you ask? Imagine you're a farmer and you have infinity fence posts to build a closed pen for your animals, and you have to use all the fence posts. And you think, well, first off, that's physically impossible. If I have infinity fence posts, then I can't use all of them because I'll always have more. Hey, while you're complaining and theorizing over there, I just built your stupid pen and it looks like this. This is a fractal, children. It's a closed shape with an infinite perimeter. What? What? Infinite perimeter? But I can see it. I can measure it. Oh no, shut up. You're not looking close enough. Let's zoom in. Basically, you can zoom up on this pattern forever. That's just what a fractal is. So since no matter how much you zoom up on this shape, it will always repeat itself. The perimeter of this shape, or the fence you use to make it, is infinite. It's a closed shape with an infinite perimeter. Is the area of this shape infinite too? I don't know, ask Vsauce. Doesn't that blow your mind? Number 4, barcode scanners scan the white spaces in the barcode, not the black spaces. Number 3, looking on my phone for hours before I go to bed. How many times do you tell your friends over Skype, alright, I'm going to bed now, and then you go to your bed and you pull out your phone and mess around with it for an hour? And I've heard some studies saying, oh, looking at computer screens all day makes it harder for you to sleep, which is probably true. Why do I go on my phone every night? And the sad thing is I usually stop looking at my phone because my battery is going to die. I have a problem. Number 2, the universe is huge. Whoa, do you realize how big space is? Man, we are just a speck in the grand scheme of things. This is kind of getting back to my point that nothing really matters. Did you know that scientists have found a black hole that's 12 billion times larger than the sun? That black hole is about 1,800 light years long. You know, you probably could have lived your whole lives without knowing that. I'm sorry. Before we get to number 1, here are some honorable mentions. And the number 1 thing that keeps me awake at night is... YouTube is not a stable job. Because of how long it takes me to make a video, I can't really give my opinion on YouTube drama. Heck, I'm still working on my Fine Bros rant. So a lot of you probably know YouTube took away some creators' monetization on videos for not being advertiser-friendly, and they weren't even telling them about it. Now, I'm a pretty innocent PG-rated channel, so I didn't get affected by this new change at all. See you later, scrubs! But dang it, if this shows us anything, is that YouTube does not care too much at what's making their website profitable. What's stopping YouTube from saying, hey, we're gonna take 90% of your ad revenue and all your titles have to say YouTube is great in them? And yeah, Yeah, if YouTube makes bad business decisions, then they'll be out of business. But so will I. So that keeps me awake at night.
So I feel a bit obligated to talk about France. It was really fun, really. Okay, one thing though. Every meal is like super important in France. Except for breakfast for some reason. For lunch and dinner, everyone sat down together as a family and talked. But for breakfast, they were just like, here's a croissant! Okay, let's go. I mean, breakfast is only the most important meal of their day. And I was going to make a joke about how they have an entire aisle of cheese in the grocery store, but I realized back home we have an entire aisle for candy and ice cream. So whatever. We went to the Louvre, which was like so amazing. They had really cool art by famous people. They had the famous statue with no arms. They had these really fancy rooms because apparently people used to live here. And probably the most famous painting in the world, the Mona Lisa. That room was super crowded. And right behind the Mona Lisa, there was this super tall painting that probably took 20 years to make. The picture frame was as wide as my body. But were people crowded around this one taking pictures? No. I don't even know what this one's called. The American school system has failed me yet again. And as someone who likes to draw, I thought it was really cool to look at the amazing color and details. Also, I took a bunch of pictures of butts. Look, this is the really famous no arm one. Look at her butt. So I had a good time, but afterwards we went to the Picasso Museum, Modern Art Museum, and this other one. I forgot its name. It was French. And it's kinda weird going into these places as someone who likes to draw cartoons. Oh, I like the colors! They're pretty neat, and oh, putting the face on the side of the head, that's an interesting design. But I kinda have to draw the line somewhere, Picasso. I mean, just look at this! Why is it framed? Someone framed this, and Picasso was a good artist. Shoot, he's better than me. So why did they draw this after him? Would you call this his best work? It's not just Picasso. Look at the modern art museums. My favorite piece was the painting of a black ring. In fact, I loved it so much that I drew over it in my phone, and probably spent more time in thought than the actual artist. I'm not saying the more real a painting looks, the more artsy it is. Wait, yes I am. I mean, look at my drawings. No, seriously, look at them. Their heads are super round and they're so white they can't dance. If I entered an art contest against Leonardo da Vinci, he would win! Because his stuff took talent. It's not easy to draw something that looks exactly like it does in real life. But cartoons? They're easy. They're so easy. And I know I'm leaving out paintings with color schemes and forms. Now after seeing this, I've come up with something called the Keith Haring Principle to help people like me better understand modern art. In the late 70s, a man named Keith Haring drew graffiti in subway stations and had sort of a unique design. Whenever he started to draw graffiti, he never thought about what the finished product was going to be. He just drew whatever he felt like. He ended up making thousands of them, and people started to notice his unique characters. Soon he got more and more famous and popular. Now he's at the point where you can buy t-shirts and mugs of his drawings. And I think that's really cool. They're interesting designs, and I would wear them. Do they belong in a museum? No. Keith made thousands of these small, simple drawings. They're still art, but not art people should pay to see. They should pay to wear and drink out of it. And by the way, this stuff is in no way research, so I'm talking completely out of my butt right now. But I think Picasso and the circle painting should be on t-shirts. Or kids' books. Or even webcomics. So people would say, hey, I like your shirt. Thanks. I like the design and would never frame it and hang it up on my wall.
I like to think that my videos, for the most part, have greatly improved in quality from the past year. Let's watch a clip of my first video. Roll the clip.
So you know those books you make in elementary school that you write as a class? And some publishing company makes them into a real book.
So you know those books you make in elementary school? Man, I don't think I could sound less insecure. And I was 18 when I made that video. I was legally old enough to get married. So I'm always trying to improve the quality of my videos. I've gotten a better microphone, I've learned to level out my audio, I like to think my drawings are more lively and move more. But sometimes when I record, I tend to smack my lips. And I always thought it was because my mouth was dry. So then I would chug an entire water bottle, but I would still sometimes have smacky lips. So I thought, is it possible I could be drinking too much water? Is that even a thing? Maybe I should drink Gatorade. So no big deal, right? First I Google how to stop lip smacking. And since I couldn't find anything that had pictures...
How can you read this? There's no pictures.
I decided to ask YouTube instead. I don't know, maybe someone out there makes voice acting tutorials. But instead, I stumbled upon something indescribable.
So, tonight is the return of the beloved lip smacking.
So there was this about 14-year-old girl just getting real close to the microphone and smacking her lips. And apparently, there's a lot higher demand for people who smack their lips than people who don't. Jeez, I don't even know why I tried to fix that problem. But you're probably thinking, James, this is just one video, right? This is just one person making a YouTube video, right? There's not like an entire community dedicated to...
Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, ASMR.
This is the entire Wikipedia page printed out with notes. You know, I bet at least some people watching this already know what it is. And you didn't tell me about it. What, you think I wasn't going to find out?
And my college charges 5 cents to print a page. So I spent 65 cents printing out this Wikipedia article. Money I'm never getting back. So what is ASMR? Basically, it's a video of someone whispering into a microphone and making certain sounds. For about 20 to 60 minutes. Now you might be thinking, why? Why did I do this? The Wikipedia article says that the purpose of ASMR is to give listeners sort of a tingly sensation in the head, and some people describe it as akin to a mild electric current. The best way I can think to describe it is, you know those Bob Ross videos? Remember how you just loved to watch them even though you couldn't paint? Why did you watch them? Yeah, you watched him because you loved his soft, gentle voice, and the sounds of the paintbrush on the canvas. And then when he'd beat his paintbrush on that little thing, you could beat me, Bobby. I think that's what ASMR is trying to create. It's basically supposed to give you the same feeling when you watch a Bob Ross video. Man, you're watching those videos a lot differently than me! Now, since I read the Wikipedia page, let me tell you some useless facts about it. The first case of ASMR was in a book written in 1925 that said, "With a roughness in her voice like a grasshopper, which rasped his spine deliciously and sent running up into his brain waves of sound." The frick? In this part about evolutionary history, David Hurin states that, "The ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic..." Faith, what is this word? Altruistic?
Altruistic.
"The ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic attention, and has strong similarities to physical grooming in primates, who derive enormous pleasure, borderlining on euphoria, when being groomed by a grooming partner, not to get clean, but rather to bond with each other." So that begs the question, do dogs like it? ASMR was officially created in 2008, but it didn't get popular until a Facebook group, along with a subreddit, was created in 2010. Now, it wasn't always called ASMR. Instead, people used phrases like brain massage, head tingle, brain tingle, spine tingle, and my personal favorite, attention-induced head orgasm. What are you doing with those grasshoppers, ma'am? But a lot of people didn't want to use orgasm in the name, because then people would think that this ASMR stuff is pretty sexual, which it totally isn't, you guys, except in 2015 when people started making a new genre of ASMR videos called ASMR Otica. And something else that's worth noting on the Wikipedia page, the popularity of ASMR videos featuring women does substantially exceed those created by male performers. However, there are some popular male ASMRists, and not all video creators are heterosexual. So can I not make ASMR videos? Is that what it's saying? So the creator of the Facebook group back in 2010 coined the term autonomous sensory meridian response. Autonomous meaning that it's spontaneous, sensory meaning the senses or sensation, and meridian meaning orgasm. I'm not making that up. Now, the word meridian doesn't mean orgasm at all. But in the Wikipedia article, it says, "Alan chose the word meridian, mistakenly believing that it was a kinder way of saying orgasmic." And look, it's even on our blog. So you're telling me this whole time, people have been using ASMR to mean climax, and that's not even what it means. Okay, some other things in the Wikipedia article I want to talk about is that apparently not everyone experiences ASMR. There's also a type of ASMR called binaural recording, where performers use two microphones and place them where your ears would be. so it's extra creepy. Another popular... Look, I'm lip-smacking right now. Another popular theme is that these videos do a lot of role-playing, specifically clinical role-playing. Now, I'm someone who never really got into the whole role-playing experience, except when Captain Sparkles does it. Come on, where's part five? Let's read the wiki! The ASMRists provide clinical or medical services, including routine general medical examinations. The creator of these videos make no claims to the reality of what is depicted, and the viewer is intended to be aware that they are watching and listening to a simulation, performed by an actor. Yeah, I don't think we can really use the word actor, Wikipedia. Okay, what else? There's little scientific work done on it. Some people say that it's great for fighting insomnia and anxiety, but others say, no, it's not. But I mean, it's not like it's bad for you. And there has been one song made to trigger ASMR, but I listened to it. I don't think song is the best word for it. It's more just normal ASMR audio. Just because it was released on an album doesn't make it a song, Wikipedia. And there's one comment on this video that I think sums up ASMR pretty well. I'm extremely uncomfortable. I had no idea that ASMR was even a thing. Did you know it was a thing? I didn't. Heck, even College Humor made a parody ASMR video. I just want to make things clear. I'm not hating on people who make ASMR videos or even people who like to watch it. And I'm certainly not jealous that some of these people have hundreds of thousands of subscribers and millions of views and all they're doing is just brushing a microphone for 20 minutes. But guys, I think this ASMR thing is getting a little out of hand. Keep in mind that all these videos are about 15 minutes to an hour long. We have this girl with a southern accent singing I'm Blue and Numa Numa to remove a curse from you.
Numa Numa, yay. I'm blue, dubba dee, dubba da.
Inaudible whispering and tongue clicking, a couple of dentist roleplays, a library book return roleplay, eating Chinese food, a couple of Yu-Gi-Oh card readings, a Minecraft Let's Play, a Five Nights at Freddy's tribute, Undertale, a Mario Maker Let's Play, Evening with the Vampire, the Joker, Satan, alien abduction for men, and torture roleplay. Really? You could type ASMR and then type anything after that and you'll get something.
You think God stays in heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created?
And what's doubly weird is that all of these videos are recent. Like, they were made in 2015 or even 2016. Well, obviously Undertale and Mario Maker are recent. But Shrek? Shrek? But just to finish things up, I just want to get something off my chest. This Undertale ASMR was pretty good. Compared to the other ones. You still might be thinking, yeah, it's pretty weird, James. Yeah, it is pretty weird. We've gotten pretty deep in the weirdness with those alien ones. And they have almost a million views. I just think this one deserves more views. You know, I just want one ASMR video to be like 40 minutes long, and then in the middle somewhere, the person just screams. Like, really hardcore screams. Yeah.
James.
Hey, Dad, I kind of have a weird request.
Okay.
Can you film the dogs with headphones in them and then send me the video?
You mean dogs wearing earbuds?
Yeah. Make sure to film it horizontally.
I don't think they won't keep earbuds in their ears.
Hey, kids, do you want some candy?
Yeah! No, kids! Never accept candy from strangers! Don't you know candy can cause cavities? Next time a stranger offers you candy, just think about all the cavities you'd get.
This message brought to you by the Dentists of America Association.
You've all heard the phrase, stranger danger, right? Probably a parent slash guardian taught you that you should never trust strangers. And that's really solid advice because you're just a dumb kid who doesn't know what a pedophile is. But all those parent slash guardians grew up without the internet. And, the internet is full of strangers. And I'm one of them. How much do you really know about me?
I'm a math education major. I want to be a math teacher.
Is that I used to have a speech impediment when I was little.
Think it was the Halloween after the bunny?
And that's why I'm a furry.
I, James, was a bedwetter until I was 8 years old! Okay, granted, you do know quite a few personal details.
The internet changes how we talk to people. Meaning, it's a lot easier to talk to strangers on the internet than in real life. Because on the internet, you can find strangers who have the same interests, hobbies, and fetishes as you do. But I find it so hard to talk to new people. I would never have enough confidence to be a door-to-door salesman. There are some jobs where you have to deal with annoying customers, but being a door-to-door salesman, you're the annoying one. I guess I just hate bothering people. I'd be a terrible salesman. What?
Do you have a water filter?
Yeah. But I was just thinking that I could use another one.
Oh, then you probably don't need this. I'm sorry for wasting your time.
One time I actually did have to be a door-to-door salesman for a Boy Scout activity. But I wasn't even selling anything. I was just telling people about a canned food drive the Scouts were doing. As a troop, it was our job to go door-to-door and ask people if there was any non-perishable food that they were willing to donate. Being a nervous little kid probably benefited me, because most people were super nice, and a lot of people donated stuff. And even the people who didn't donate were like, oh, sorry, I don't have anything on me.
You don't have any canned foods?
Well, dude, that's perfect. The house next door just gave me some. Here, these are for you. But there were two houses I went to that I still remember to this day. One guy pointed to his no soliciting sign and asked me if I knew what it said.
Yeah, I know what soliciting is.
I'd always thought that soliciting meant I couldn't sell you something, not that I couldn't ask you for free food. And at the other house, all the guy said was, listen, I'm not interested. And then both houses slammed the door in my face. Some of you are probably thinking, that's it? That was nothing. And yeah, looking back at the situation, I got off pretty easily. People who are a full-time door-to-door salesman probably have to deal with way worse stuff every day. But to a fragile-minded kid who was just doing what his scoutmaster told him to do, those experiences scarred me. Luckily, I'm not a salesman, so I'm usually the person on the other side of the door. I never know what to say to these people. For the longest time, I used to tell them the exact same thing. My mom's not home. But one day, that's not going to work. So for now, I just have to pretend that I'm interested, tell them I'll give them a call, and then put their pamphlet into the pile. My grandma, however, would, treat these door-to-door salesmen very differently. You see, my grandma is known as the nicest person on the planet, so she would invite these salesmen inside, offer them a glass of water, and then show them pictures of her grandkids. I'm not exaggerating. One time I was at my grandgram's house just playing some video games, and this person, an adult person I'd never seen before, just started watching me play. Are you one of my cousins? And then my grandma handed him a big cup of water filled with ice and a straw. They talked for a bit. He left, and I asked, Gram-Gram, who was that?
Oh, it was someone just trying to sell me a vacuum cleaner.
But salesmen don't have it the hardest on the doorstep. There's also Jehovah Witnesses and Mormon missionaries who are literally trying to save your soul. I can't even get mad at these people, because if you had the secret to eternal happiness, wouldn't you be telling everyone in your neighborhood too? They're trying to do good and all, but whenever they show up, hello, do you have time for to be baptized?
Oh, sorry guys, but you're wasting your time. You see, I'm in YouTuber, so I'm not going to heaven.
Here's a story that's a prime example of me failing at talking to people. I had just finished grocery shopping at Walmart, and this isn't important to the story, but Adam from Something Else YT was there.
Hello. Walmart's where I make friends.
I was walking to my car, and I started eating an Uncrustable frozen PB&J sandwich that I bought, and this guy drives up to me and yells, man, you're not even waiting to get in the car. You're just eating that thing up.
Yeah, I was hungry.
Then he pulls his car over and says, all right, listen, fellas, I'm traveling to Buckeye and I need $8 for gas, but I forgot my wallet at home. And I thought, huh, that's coincidentally how much a pack of cigarettes costs. He offered us his CDs in exchange for $8, but Adam said the smart thing.
Sorry, man, I don't got any cash on me.
And he showed the man his empty wallet. Poor. All I have is a 10.
You stupid mother...
I don't know why I said that. I think I was actually going to pay this man $8 if I had exact change. But here's the thing. I didn't only have a 10. I also had a 20. The guy saw my cash and said, man, pff, all you have is a 10. Nah, man, I see you have a 20. And then he raised the price of his CDs from $8 to $30. Like I said, I should have handled the situation differently. If I was going to give him money, I should have given him a 10 and said, now give me $2 back. But he had a solid argument. He said, if there were 20 dudes who all tried to jump you, I'd have your back. Now that's not a bad price for a Walmart parking lot bodyguard.
You know, man, you gotta realize that money is just an object.
Okay, then why do you want it? He asked us, do you boys like rap music? He does.
Hey, I do. I listen to, like, Eminem, Kendrick Lamar, and Chance the Rap. Oh, no.
And then the man pulled out his CDs, but he didn't have a CD player in his car, so he asked me if I could use my CD player, and I said, sure, but my CD player already had my mixtape in that I never bothered to take out, so when I turned on my CD player... Oh, I got something in my throat. By the way, if you want to listen to my whole mixtape, link in the description. Adam and I started listening to his CDs, and the man started doing this. Yeah, that's the good stuff. So what'll it be, little man? You gonna give me the money or not, huh? Do I need to get my gang of 19 other dudes out, huh? Yeah, I ended up giving the guy my $30. Honestly, I didn't get the meth head drug user vibe from him. He was more of a goofy dad who just needed $30. And after I gave him the money, he thanked us, saying things like, God bless you, and talked about how much he was going to miss his CD. Now, was I scammed out of $30 and secretly this guy is laughing to himself that he sold a used rap CD to a white boy? Yeah, that definitely could be a possibility, but I hope whoever this guy is, that he pays the good deed forward. And I hope you made it to wherever you need to be. In conclusion, never carry cash on your kids.
And now, for the moment you've all been waiting for! Da, di da di li da di li da di li da di li da, di da di li da di li da di li da di li da, di da di li da di li da di li da di li da, di da di da, ksh, di da di li da di li da di li da di li da, di da di li da di, di da di li da di li da di li da di li da. This is not clickbait. I don't clickbait. You can ask my friends. So, surprise everyone, you're about to get so much Odd Ones content this year. I've been contractually obligated to keep this a secret from you for a long time now, but today's the day I'm finally allowed to tell you that we're making a Netflix show. We, meaning the entire team of amazing and talented people who worked on this show in every department, who consistently improved the quality with everything they did. This project would not have been possible without everyone's amazing work, so thank you. Oh, and speaking of amazing teams, give it up for the YouTube team who's been working hard on these videos while I've been busy on this. It takes a village to raise a child and make a season of a cartoon show. How did this all happen, I hear you ask? Well, it all started when I partnered up with a television writer named Ethan Banville, and together we came up with a show about a boy who looks and sounds and is named after me, and a crocodile.
A crocodile? You mean like the one that was in your music video, Life is Fun? Have you been working on this since 2018?
Oh, no, no, no. I mean, kind of. We pitched the show to Netflix in early 2020, but we didn't get the green light until August of 2020. So that means the entire production has been done in lockdown. All the writing, the storyboarding, the designing, the voice acting has been done with little to no human interaction. I still have yet to work in an office. I just want to lean against a water cooler and say things like, yo, did you catch the game last night? Is that too much to ask? And before I go, I just wanted to thank all of you for watching my videos. I've always wanted to entertain people with cartoons, and without you watching these cartoons and supporting me, I wouldn't have had this amazing opportunity. I'm sure you're all dying to see what the team's been working on, but you'll have to wait. I will be going to some conventions in the next few months, and I plan on showing more teasers of the show until its release in... sometime later this year. You can visit my website in the description and check out the new items, along with signing up for emailed updates as we get closer to the premiere date. I'm still going to post regular videos here on YouTube. Like I said earlier, I have an amazing team working on these YouTube videos. It's just, this is why it's been longer between uploads, okay? Thank you all again, and I hope you enjoy the show. When you watch it. Later this year. And if you're planning on going to VidCon in Anaheim this year, I will be showing exclusive clips and storyboards at my panel. That's only in, like, a couple of days. You don't even have to wait that long. But if you really want to see something and you just can't wait, then I guess...
Go!
See, everything worked out.
Oh, I want to be a ladder!
Uncle James, can we play Space Explorer?
Shut up for a second. I'm watching this unnaturally charming preschool show.
Why are you watching a show for babies?
Okay, kid. This show is extremely sophisticated and can be enjoyed by both children and adults. So why don't you shut your ignorant mouth and find someone who actually loves you to play your silly little space game?
Crikey, Bingo! You can't say that to your sister! You have to say nice things! Treat others how you want to be treated, mate!
Oh, I really needed to hear that today. This episode of The Odd Ones Out is called... Are you familiar with the Australian animated preschool show Bluey? If your TikTok algorithm is anything like mine, you'll have seen a bunch of clips of this blue cartoon dog all over your For You page, paired with Subway Surfer highlights. Wow, TikTok, clips of a foreign preschool show? I thought you were supposed to cater to my interests. Let's read some of the comments on these Bluey TikToks, shall we? No shame, I'm a senior in high school, but I watch Bluey religiously, and this episode had me all in my feels. I'd say I had a good childhood, but I binge Bluey because adult life is so stressful and I'm sad, and it reminds me of a simpler time. Bluey is for everyone. I'm literally 27, and it's such a comfort show.
Bluey is absolutely destroying me as a teenager who wishes he had this childhood.
In my teen years and watching full episodes of Bluey.
Watching Bluey high is such a fun time, dude.
Huh. You know, to me, I'm just thinking out loud here. It seems like a lot of these comments weren't made by preschoolers. What's going on here? Now, if your brain is anything like mine, you'll be thinking, why is this show about Australian dogs so popular with adults who don't even have children? In fact, why does Bluey have over 5 billion views on TikTok, is searched more than Paw Patrol, Peppa Pig, and Cocomelon, and why is this episode number 8 in IMDb's highest rated episodes of all time? This phenomenon intrigued me, and I was also bullied by a large number of people on my own team to watch the show. So, one day I sat down, put on the first episode, and...
I watched all 141 episodes.
Hang on, James! 141? But there's only 129 on Disney Plus! Don't worry, my fellow obsessive Bluey fan, we're gonna talk about that later. I work in cartoons, and I've been to furry conventions, so Bluey has always been on my radar of shows I'm aware of. And just from the clips that I saw, I adored the art style, especially the backgrounds. So much so that my very own background team has studied and taken inspiration from Bluey's backgrounds. Here you can see my backgrounds taking on a more Bluey aesthetic. I mean, just look at the colors, especially their greens. Oh my god! Doesn't just looking at these backgrounds bring a smile to your face? While I was watching the first season, I realized, oh, okay, I see why this show is so popular. Because it's genuinely a good show. We've already established that the show is great to look at, but the voice acting, the sound design, and the music are equally as amazing, so it's also great to listen to. While most, if not all, other preschool shows will hire adults who can sound like toddlers, Bluey gets actual children to voice the actual child characters. Somehow, every Australian toddler in Bluey can be so expressive and emotional. It's impressive that the show got such a talented cast of child actors who don't sound annoying to listen to. Or maybe it's just their Aussie accents that I like, I don't know. The characters have so much personality, and the comedic timing is something I've never seen before in a preschool show. I can't think of a single time Cocomelon has made me laugh this much, or even smile. The four main characters are Chili and Bandit, the parents, and Bluey and Bingo, the 6 and 4-year-old daughters. Yes, Bluey is a girl. You gotta catch up, dude. Come on, it's 2023. The show also does not hide the fact that it's Australian. It references multiple Australian locations and animals, they call flip-flops thongs, and they say things like, "Oh, nor!" While some preschool shows focus on teaching kids numbers and letters, Bluey focuses on the relationship of the family and teaches its lessons through the make-pretend games that the family plays. And I want to emphasize how perfect these two parents are. These two are the most patient and emotionally aware parents I've seen ever. There are multiple times where the parents apologize to their kids for, frankly, not even doing anything wrong. The dad is like, the most perfect dad role model, okay? Check this out. Bingo was sad that dad didn't get to see the leaf bug outside. She was like,
"Daddy, come and see. Come here, Daddy. Quickly."
But he was too busy playing with Bluey, you know, being a present father figure in her life. And at night, she's all boo-hoo about it, and he kneels down, gets to her level, and apologizes, explaining that he didn't hear her.
Now, I don't have any kids, but if I spent my weekend running around with toddlers, and then right before bed one of them said, "You didn't get to see the ladybug," I would say, "That's okay. I've already seen a ladybug. Good night." In one episode, Chicken Rat, Bingo lost her favorite toy, and Mom asks, "Well, where was the last place you had it?" The two retrace Bingo's steps, and through flashbacks, we see this bizarre day that Bluey and Bingo had. The very first flashback we see, Bluey and Bingo are cooking a chicken rat egg while wearing weird costumes. And through this creative backward storytelling, we piece together what a chicken rat is and how the kids ended up in this situation. It's episodes like that which really make me appreciate the care that went into this show, and really sets Bluey apart from every other preschool show. Most preschool shows stick to a formula and talk down to the viewer, because typically their viewers are short. As a childless adult, I don't want to say, "This show teaches you how to be a good parent," because I don't know how to be a good parent. But on paper, there are lessons in this show that are just as important for the parents to learn. So while watching season one, I got a feel for the world and characters. I started to piece together, okay, this show is depicting perfect parents, it's well written and wholesome, anyone regardless of having kids can enjoy the show. Let's watch the rest, shall we? Season 2 and Season 3 is when things go from 100 to 1,000. This is when episodes cover deep and emotional topics that I think toddlers are too baby to understand. Let's see, there's the struggles of keeping romance in your relationship alive when you have two toddlers to look after, why taking time to play with your kids can have a ripple effect that lasts into adulthood, feeling inadequate as a mom, what it's like having a dad in the army, parents disagreeing on different parenting styles, moms getting tipsy implied, dealing with infertility, abandonment, potentially a miscarriage, that one's still up in the air, and death. Actually, that one was in season one. You can't even compare Bluey to other preschool shows. Like, what the fuck was Dora the Explorer even doing? Was she even trying to entertain the adults who are also going to be watching her show? Dora had the same formula every episode, and there was a map who sang a song that was just repeating the same three words 14 times. Season 2, there's an episode where Chili is telling Bluey about how when she was a baby, she wasn't crawling or rolling over as fast as the other babies in her mom group, and she compared Bluey's developmental delay to the other babies and felt inadequate as a mother. And then this pink poodle comes to console her, looks directly into the camera, and says, "You're doing great." I'm a he-him male with no kids, and I still get teary-eyed just thinking about that episode. People will tell you that Bluey is a kid's show that adults can enjoy too. No! That episode wasn't for the kids. It was directed at all the moms watching who are doubting their motherhood. When has Cocomelon ever done something like this? All the babies stop singing mid-nursery rhyme, look directly into the camera and say, "Hey mom, just wanted to say you're doing a great job raising me. Keep up the good work." Like, no, that'll never happen! I'm still not done talking about how impressive the writing in Bluey is, okay? So please indulge me for a bit. I'm switching into video essay mode as we do a deep dive into the themes and symbolisms of one of my favorite Bluey episodes, Flatpak. The entire episode is an allegory of human history told from a religious and scientific perspective, respectively. And it touches on the ever-growing relationships between a mother and child, all within 7 minutes. No, I'm not reading too deep into this. Let's begin. Bandit and Chili set out to build a new swing for their porch, and we get this great meta self-aware joke from Bandit when he complains about the instructions saying, I'm not taking advice from a cartoon dog. Meanwhile, the girls play games with the leftover packing materials that are thrown into the yard by their parents. Bluey and Bingo are given bubble wrap, which they pretend is water, so they pretend they're fish. Then they're given cardboard, which they pretend is land, so they pretend they're frogs. Then they're given tails and become lizards, then T-Rexes, then birds, then furry little animals. Is this chart starting to look familiar? Then they're monkeys, and then bipedal cave dogs. What? Is that you, Mr. Darwin? Were these girls playing out the evolution of man through a silly game? Now, if you didn't like the evolution symbolism, I know you're going to love the parents being an allegory for the creators. You know, the big guy upstairs, the whatever you believe is going on.
The parents supply the girls with their entire world. They give the girls the sea, the land, the volcanoes, and the trees. In these cave paintings the girls make that tell their history, they depict the parents as gods, higher up and in the clouds. They do look a little angry. Perhaps they're still in the Old Testament. The parents being the creators is hinted at again by Chili when she looks at the girls lovingly saying, "Aww, we made them. The parents give the girls an Allen wrench, aka tools, and one industrial revolution later, the girls evolve from cave dogs to modern dogs, building futuristic towns and spaceships. Throughout the episode, as the girls go through different stages of evolution, they also go through different stages of their lives as a mother and child. As fish, Bluey says that she's the mommy fish and Bingo is the baby. Then as frogs, Bingo pretends to be a toddler and Bluey teaches her how to catch flies. Then as T-Rexes, Bingo becomes a big girl. Then as cave dogs, she's a teenager. And finally, in the last stage, she's all grown up, ready to traverse the universe on her own. She thanks Bluey for looking after her and leaves on her spaceship. Bluey, now much older, as shown by her having to use a cane, crosses the styrofoam threshold, which represents her death, and she gets to live with her creators. All while this orchestral masterpiece is playing, and suddenly you realize you're crying? When did that start? And then Bandit ties the allegory all together at the very end, saying, "Ah, this is heaven." Are you joshing me right now? This preschool show was able to tell a clever allegorical story with tasteful religious undertones in how many minutes? Did you just make me feel emotions over a cartoon dog? This isn't the only episode you can make an in-depth video essay on. There are plenty of other episodes that hit just as hard as this one. While I was doing research for this video, it got me thinking about another foreign animated kid show with 8-minute long episodes that focus on a family of two toddlers. Except, unlike Bluey, this show is universally hated. Caillou, it's Caillou. I had this idea in my head that people only hated Caillou because he was a more accurate portrayal of a toddler. But in the handful of Caillou episodes I watched, I was reminded, oh no, that's why people hate Caillou. Because he sucks! His brattiness isn't even important to the plot, it comes out of nowhere. Caillou will be getting ready in the morning, he spills cat food and says, "Gilbert, look what you did. He's at the beach and this bird who's done nothing wrong gets told to go away. And there's a bunch more examples of Caillou being a whiny piece of shit. And I can't help but think that Caillou's screeching, piercing, whiny voice does not help him be a likable character. I bet real toddlers can be little punks sometimes, but why would you show that in your cartoon and not have him learn any lesson? There's never a lesson learned in Caillou. Since Caillou was a brat all the time, a lot of people, myself included, wondered why Caillou's parents never disciplined or even tried to change his bratty behavior. But after I thought about it, I realized it would be a very weird episode of Caillou if one day Caillou's mom was like, "Caillou, what did you do to your sister?"
"I made her look pretty, Mommy."
"Caillou, that was Mommy's expensive makeup. How many times do I have to tell you not to touch Mommy's things? Come here, you little twit."
"Mommy, why are you hitting me?"
"Getting a spanking."
"Mommy, you're hurting me."
"I've had enough of you, Caillou. I hate you."
That kid got what was coming to him.
I don't know, maybe that episode would be cathartic to some parents. Anyways, getting back to the actual best children's show ever, even though Bluey is literally the most mentally intelligent and educational show for the minds of children, teens, adults, and parents, some unnamed mouse company decided to censor some of the episodes on their platform. It's the strangest things that got censored, too. This horse pooping, Bandit getting hit in the groin, Bandit saying the word groin, this hitchhiker is no longer from Argentina, that one's kinda weird, this pretend cat saying it will pretend pee on the curtains, Bandit hinting at wanting to get snip snip down there. Adults, you know what I'm talking about. And the last 10 episodes of season 3, which are some of the deepest episodes in the series, aren't even on Disney Plus. But that could just be a licensing thing, I don't know. I kept waiting for the infertility episode, I heard so much about it, I finally got to the last episode on Disney Plus and thought, oh, okay, they're saving the deepest one for last. Alright, let's do this. And the episode was about the family playing courtroom to determine if Bandit farted. I hope this video convinced you to give Bluey a chance.
I mean, you're still here listening to a grown man talk about it, so you gotta be at least a little interested in it. Through its relatable and realistic portrayal of family life, the show has not only entertained, but also taught valuable life lessons to its viewers. The show's emphasis on play and family bonding is so refreshing to see compared to the usual fast-paced, mind-numbing shows aimed at kids. Bluey reminds us all the importance of spending time with loved ones and finding joy in the everyday. And if you still don't want to watch Bluey, have you thought about getting high and watching it? Thank you all so much for watching this episode of James getting obsessed over something he probably shouldn't be. Did you have a favorite part about this episode? Yeah, that was my favorite part too. Just one quick announcement. My newest Oddballs book is available on my website right now, so if you enjoyed the show, be sure to head over and reserve your copy today. It'll be full of new stories and illustrations and will be released on September 6th, and I'm super excited to hear what you all think of it. Anyway, thanks again for watching. Big shout out to my amazing team. They really crushed it this video, and you better be wearing your seatbelts.
So I was sitting in the doctor chair because I was about to donate blood, because I do that, and I was thinking, ugh, the next video is like 6 minutes long. That's twice as long as my other videos. I need to come up with a super short video to keep my viewers quen. So I was sitting in the recovery room eating my pretzels. You know, okay, what happened to the good food you'd get when you donated blood? I remember a year ago when I started donating, they had fruit snacks and double stuffed Oreos and apple juice. Now it's like, here's some water and some pretzels. You're a real hero, you know? Like, that was one of the main reasons I donated blood. Oh, you saved so many lives. Thank you. Yeah. Just give me my Oreos. Like, if I was roommates with Dracula and he offered to cook me a meal, like a good tasting meal for a cup of my blood, I would accept it in a heartbeat. I mean, not every day, obviously. Maybe like every Friday. So this all happened about an hour ago. Well, probably like 2 days ago when this video comes out. And if you're watching it a year from now, it happened about a year ago. So sorry if I don't sound as animated as usual. So it is entirely possible that someone watching this has my blood in them. And I think that makes us related. By blood. So I got into the blood donation business because my dad has O negative blood, which is the universal donor blood. They keep O negative blood on ambulances because O negative can give to everyone. There's no blood tests needed, but I'm O positive, which is the most common blood type. So I'm not special. One time I was in a child development class, and I don't know how the topic came up, but my table started talking about blood types. And I said, oh, I'm O positive. And this girl across from me says, oh, I forget mine, but my doctor said I'm the universal donor. And I said, oh, that means you're O negative. And then the teacher walks by and is like, oh, you're talking about blood types? What are you, girl? And she says, O neg. She said, oh, neg. Like, so many people have asked her what her blood type is, and she didn't want to waste her time any more than she had to by saying, a TIV. You didn't even know what your blood type was until I said it. And then, I don't remember why, but she got her donor card out of her purse, and it says what blood type you have, and she says, huh, on here it says I have O positive. So I guess O positive is the universal donor. And you know those moments where you want to argue with someone because you're so obviously right, but you just don't care enough and you don't want to talk to the person any longer than you have to? You know those moments? So I go, oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, hey there, partner! Have you ever wondered where your favorite Odd Ones merch comes from? Well, head on down to Odd Ones Family Farm and see where the merch comes to life! Here at Odd Ones, we've got the largest merch fields in the country! We have a whole lot of things for you to enjoy! Over here, we've got pins and keychains growing by the bushel. We water them with fresh enamel every day so they stay nice and shiny. Look at the glimmer on that sucker.
Glimmery.
Or maybe you want to stop by our tree shirt orchard and see how we grow our t-shirts and hoodies. Softer than a marshmallow's bottom. We pick these fresh just before the holiday season, and if you buy one shirt, I'll throw in another one just because I like you. Oh, would you look at this? Our plushies are just about ready to harvest. Get ready to see one of nature's most amazing miracles. Oh, whoops. I guess they're not ripe yet.
wait, there's more! All of our posters and board games are printed from our Pedigree inkjet cows. How's your ink today, Bessie? You think you can print one more poster for us? Ah, now look at that shine! Be sure to stop by our petting zoo and bundle up in one of our fleece blankets during this cold winter season. And don't you worry, we remove the sheep carcass before we send you the blanket. Yes, sirree, we've got deals for everybody. Get them while they're hot. Come on, don't be shy. There, little buddy. Are you lost? If you're searching for something really special, we've got that too. You're a lucky one, you know that? I don't usually let folks see what I'm cooking down here. Usually. I've got the peekaboo print shirt, cozy colored print hoodies and long sleeve tees, freshly squeezed wave knit socks. Oh, those? Those are just Baby James drool beanies. Careful, they bite. Now this... this is the best, most cream-of-the-crop invention yet. Now all of my fans can have a little piece of me. And I can be with them forever.
Help me.
Where are you going? Don't you want to stay for the deals?
No fair man or hurt in making this video. Can't sit and stand about with only stuff, though. Anyways, now that the harvest has begun, hurry on over to theoddonesout.com to find your perfect bundle before we sell out. Our new lab items include the Doodle Hoodie, Baby James Genie, a bunch of new shirts, arcade blanket, color weighted socks, and my personal favorite, The Odd Ones Out official lava lamp. There's also the chance to grab some oddballs merch, too. Grab your James, Max, and Josie plate today. And remember, don't go to any scary farms this holiday season. But if you do, be sure to film it. All right, that's all you're going to hear from me. Remember to wear your seatbelt.
Mommy? Why do humans hate us?
I don't know, Matthew. Our species is completely harmless to them, and we keep the mosquito population down, who are responsible for killing more humans every year than other humans do.
So, humans have no rational reason to fear us, but they still do?
I'm afraid humans aren't that smart, Matthew. Sleep tight. Don't let the bed humans bite.
Love you, Mommy.
I love you too, Matthew.
Mom?
I think the hate that spiders get is a tad bit undeserved. Okay, fine, if you're in the shower and you see a spider crawling up your leg like a freaking pervert, then that's an appropriate time to freak out. But other than that, spiders are most likely not going to hurt you. Their webs are too weak to trap you, they don't know how to open doors, and there's only like a 50% chance that they're venomous. Okay, but for real, unless you live in Australia, the chances of you dying by a spider bite is pretty low. There are venomous spiders, yes, and if you're having a negative reaction to a spider bite, then you should get treatment, but a large percentage of spiders are harmless. Even the Black Widow, known as the most venomous spider in North America, won't kill you if you're a healthy adult. Their bite will be painful for a couple of days, sure, but, like, you'll walk it off.
That was a joke. If you get bitten by a Black Widow spider, then don't walk it off. Go see a doctor.
And hey, if you're lucky enough, you'll get superpowers. So, wait, the two most dangerous spiders in North America are the brown recluse and the Black Widow? What are you trying to say about dangerous colors, America? Oh, wait, the great white shark's even more dangerous. Never mind. Technically, sharks are, like, the second least dangerous animal out there besides puppies. Because, like, they don't want to eat humans. I mean, like, if you had to fight a spider and a shark, this shark would win. Also, spiders kill pests. According to this comic I made in 2014 and this National Geographic article, a single spider can eat about 2,000 insects a year. So if you're not a fan of flies, moths, or mosquitoes, which incidentally kill 600,000 people a year, then you're on Team Spider, because they're also not fans of them. Well, they are fans of them, but they are fans because they eat them. I'm not saying you have to be roommates with arachnids. I'm just saying that if you see a spider, don't put it through torture continuously smashing it with a blunt object. It's still moving! It's still moving!
Kill me.
Instead, get a cup and carefully place it over a spider. They're really dumb, so doing this will be super easy. Then scoop up your new best friend with a piece of paper and yeet it back into the wild with the rest of God's glorious creatures.
Yeah, actually, there's a high chance that they won't make it being thrown into a completely different environment. But they should have thought of that before they decided to live in my house. Even though a spider has 8 eyes, they have terrible eyesight. So that spider that landed on your face did not do it intentionally. Some spiders that live in caves are completely blind. They don't even have 1 eye. But even if they did have eyes, their whole world would still be pitch black. What a sad life to be a part of. Just every time you're outside seeing the sun, just think that somewhere there's a colony of spiders just in pure blackness. Just never seeing the sun, never seeing their children smile or graduate college. They're just sitting in a cave for all their life. So is nature, and that is the way the cookie crumbles. Also, we're forgetting the most amazing thing about spiders, which is that they're incredibly talented in web design. Proportionately, the silk that makes up a spider web is stronger than the fibers that make up a bulletproof vest. So next time you go to a gunfight, put on a spider web instead. The amazing thing about spider webs is that not only can they save Wilbur from being slaughtered, but it's just stupid incredible that something so small can make such an intricate shape from nothing but the material inside their own bodies. The golden silk orb weaver spider has too many middle names and has enough silk inside of them to make 3 full spider webs. And it's this guy's job to pin that spider down and pull out all of its silk like some kind of spider predator. It's okay though, the documentary said he was just harmlessly immobilizing the spiders. I can't believe this is someone's job. I don't think telling people I'm a YouTuber is that bad anymore. So, what do you do for a living? I harmlessly immobilize spiders with thumbtacks and pull silk out of their abdomen to add to my ever-increasing collection. What about you? Oh, I, make YouTube videos? I see people with arachnophobia being irrationally afraid of these harmless little guys, and I just don't see the sense of fearing something that ultimately does good things for the ecosystem. But you know what we should be afraid of? Bees! Bees are terrifying! Look, they're sucking the blood out of this guy to make honey! Oh, they're dying at an alarming rate? Good! Okay, that was a joke. Bees are, without a doubt, the most important insect on this planet. Not only do they have the best work ethic of any living thing on Earth, which is why none of them are YouTubers, they also pollinate 30% of the world's crops. Don't ask me who pollinates the rest, because I don't know. Without bees, humanity would turn to pure anarchy. Bees are so important that world-famous comedian Jerry Seinfeld made a documentary about the life of a bee and what the world would be like without them. But ever since 2006, bees, just like all the memes say, have been dying at an alarming rate. The scary thing is that scientists don't know exactly the reason for this bee-pocalypse. But they think it has to do with new pesticides being used on farms, parasites that kill the bee, and global warming. So once we figure out how to fix those 3 problems, we'll be in good shape. It's a little bee pun. We like to have fun around here. Now, what can you, a concerned citizen, do to stop the dropping population of bees? Most likely nothing, because I don't think anyone watching this makes laws about pesticides or stopping global warming. So we just gotta sit back and hope the people who make those laws know the importance of bees. But maybe you should plant a couple flowers just to be on the safe side. The reason I have a fear of bees is that I've gotten stung by a bee not 3 times, not 4 times, but 2 times! Two times! Now, obviously, as I've grown, I see the importance of bees, and I know not to throw rocks at them. The first time I got stung, I was outside, and I guess I was playing too close to a beehive, because I got stung on my arm, and I cried a lot. The second time, I was in my backyard, barefoot, and I was walking around, and you know how sometimes when you're about to do something, and your brain realizes that you're about to make a mistake, but your body is already committed to the motion, and you don't have enough time to stop yourself? So I was in the middle of taking a step, and I saw that I was about to step on a bee, but my body didn't have the reaction time or the motor skills to avoid the step, and... I'm sure the bee was just acting in self-defense, but... Man, that scarred me. Some people may have an allergic reaction to bee stings, and they should go to a hospital if they get stung, but in my case, it just hurt a lot, and my mom put baking soda over where I got stung, and I cried. When people found out I was afraid of bees, they would always tell me that bees are docile creatures, and they only sting you if they feel threatened. They would say the same thing about spiders too, by the way. So whenever I would see a bee, I would silently freak out and stay as still as a rock, cause unlike spiders, with bees, you're not allowed to fight back. You'll both lose if that happens. I gotta show this bee how unthreatening I am. It should be able to just take a look at me and know that. But then, when a bee lands on your arm... Holy frick. That's true fear. You just have to quietly watch the bee, hoping it didn't just have a bad day and decide to end its life on you. That never happened, though. Ever since I took a more calm approach to bees, I've never been stung. And I've never been bitten by a spider, either. Wasps, though, they're just mean. They can pack up and leave for all I care. I don't give a crap about wasps. So, what did we learn? Today's video was sponsored by carrots. We're actually alright if you put other stuff on us. I wouldn't consider my parents health nuts, more like health kernels. They would never buy unhealthy snacks, but they wouldn't force me and my siblings to go outside and play because it was always burning hot. And we just licked the melted candy off the sidewalk anyways. They would never buy sugary cereal. The most sugary cereal my parents got was Honey Nut Cheerios. But my mom would mix the Honey Nut Cheerios with regular ones to make it more healthy or something. So I would start every day spending 15 minutes picking out the regular Cheerios from the cereal bowl. That's right, my parents didn't buy us cable, Cocoa Puffs, or candy. My life sucked. We were allowed to eat sugary cereal for one day out of the year, and that was on Christmas morning. It's a fun tradition, and we still do it to this day. As a kid, I would always get jealous when my friends would pull out their Lunchables and tell me how much their family ate out and all the sugary cereals they got to eat. Meanwhile, I had a PB&J sandwich on wheat bread with the crust still on, but it's okay because I like the crust. But now looking back, I'm just so grateful that my mom cared enough about my health to instill these healthy eating habits into me at a young age. I mean, I don't follow them anymore because I live on my own and I don't know how to cook and bagel bites taste so darn good, but I'm still thankful my mom taught me what I should be doing. Now, if there's any parents watching this going, I like the way this James's mom character thinks. Good. I would recommend to all parents that you should be teaching your kids healthy eating habits as soon as possible. I definitely didn't appreciate it at the time, but now that I'm older and wiser, I'm thankful that I like the taste of wheat bread. My parents had a saying, the wider the bread, the sooner you're dead. They would always get wheat bread. Even for hot dog and hamburger buns, they got wheat. Some of you might have had to use sandwich bread as hot dog buns. You're poor, I get it, but at least you didn't have to use wheat bread. However, now that I live on my own, I still get the wheat bread because I don't want to die young. I still have YouTube videos to make. Some things never change, I guess. Except I do get the white hot dog buns. The wheat ones are still gross. When I was a very little kid, my dad's work was throwing a barbecue get-together thing, and I got to eat as many hot dogs on white bread as I could handle. But the best part of it all was I got to wash it down with soda. Listen, I was very sugar-deprived back home. I had to catch up on all the sugar I was missing out on. I don't remember what the soda was exactly, but let's just say for the sake of this story, it was an original bottle of Coke from the 1800s. It might as well have had cocaine because I was addicted to all the white powdery stuff they added into that drink. Pretty soon, my tummy started to get the rumblies, and I had no idea what was causing it. So I told my dad, "Dad, my tummy hurts." And he said, "It's probably because you're dehydrated. Here, have some soda." And I still respected my dad at that age and thought he knew what he was talking about, so I drank more soda. And then I threw up and my dad said, "We should leave." I mentioned this next story in my first book, available in bookstores near you. Be on the lookout for book number 2, coming out at the end of March. But one time my mom bought a giant 3-pound bag of Skittles. I forgot what she bought them for, but they definitely weren't for us. She locked them away in a closet because she knew what us kids would do if we got our grubby little hands on the Skittles. This wasn't the first time my mom had to hide candy from us, but this time she forgot to lock the closet, leaving the Skittles unprotected. And me and my older brother ate the entire thing, and we would have gotten away with it, but then something came up. Puke. I threw up on the family room carpet. My mom saw how rainbow the throw-up was and immediately put 2 and 2 together and knew that we had gotten into our Skittles. The funny part of this story is that my older brother got punished, but I didn't. Because according to my mom, I had already suffered enough. And that's why that story is in the chapter titled, Perks of Being the Younger Brother. Anyways, don't eat so much candy that you throw up. Okay, I'm going to be talking about M&Ms for a while, so to make it go faster, instead of saying M&Ms, I'm just going to say In one of my older videos, I said that my favorite candy bar was and every time I would tell people that, they would always say, "That's not a candy bar." I just can't do this anymore. But then something interesting happened. A year after that video was posted, actually released a bar version of their candy. So now I can absolutely say that is my favorite candy bar and not get any weird looks. Someone at the marketing team sent me a box of candy bars, and I think they wanted me to promote it, but because I said that M's are my favorite candy bar, whenever I go to a convention, sometimes you guys bring me candy, which is very thoughtful, but
you know, I like other things too, like Oreos and Twix and money. You know, I'm just saying you don't have to bring me all the time. When I was visiting London, I went to the store with my friends Adam and Mads, and if you don't know about the London store, it's 4 stories tall, 35,000 square feet, and according to Wikipedia, the largest sweet store in the world. So it was kinda big. Once I stepped inside, my first thought was, okay, this is too much. It was like the candy forest scene in Willy Wonka, except it was all chocolate and expensive. In one part of the store, you could make your own custom mms with a picture and two phrases. So for the picture, I googled my cartoon self, held up my phone to the camera, and it bloody worked, mate. And for the phrases, naturally we wanted to write something that was meaningful, so we wrote Mad Stinks and Adam Smells. But the employee didn't allow us to write that because it was too negative and went against the brand. So knowing we were not allowed to roast each other, the next phrases we decided to print was Get Mads and Something Else YT. It wasn't creative, but without being able to make fun of each other, we didn't have a lot to work with. But those phrases weren't allowed either, because they were the names of some YouTubers, so they got flagged by the system, and they told us, you'll need permission from the YouTuber, even though you're both right here. Listen, boys, I'm just a employee. I don't want to get sued. On one hand, I'm glad that has a system in place to prevent people from stealing. But on the other hand, it's just mms. What do you think we're going to do with them? So after 2 failed attempts at getting the phrase we wanted, we settled on getting Adam! And Mads! At least I still got my Cannonball Guy printed, even though technically this image is copyrighted, so you'll be hearing from my lawyers soon. One of the disadvantages of being a YouTuber is the lack of benefits. We don't even have dental. And with all the junk food I'm eating and the flossing I'm not doing, I should probably see one. Can I confess something? I didn't know dentists were optional. I thought they summoned you to their offices like jury duty. That's what it felt like when I was a kid. I've never gotten a cavity, though. At least not one that I know of. So at least I'm doing something right. Now comes the part of the video where I give you advice on eating healthy. But I'm still working on that myself. And when I don't know what to eat, I can't help but biting down on a delicious carrot. Carrots are the most popular vegetable in the world, having been nominated as the best orange thing ever. Use code ODDONE next time you purchase a carrot to get 5,000 free carrot points and a bunch of weird looks at the grocery store. Give your body the fuel it needs. You wouldn't pour soda in a car engine and expect it to run. Of course, that's not really the best metaphor to use because you also wouldn't pour water into a car and expect it to run. I guess everyone drink gasoline because cars and people are the same. But the point is, you've only got one body, so you should take care of it.
There are 3 major milestones that every YouTuber can get to. The first is when they get 1 million subscribers. The second one is when they get their content either stolen or reacted to by a big reaction channel. And the third is when there is fan fiction written about them. Well, ladies and gentlemen, today we have the first fan fiction written about me. I have done a read-through where I read this fan fiction blind and unscripted, but it kind of took a little too long, and I don't want to sound ungrateful, but it wasn't the best. I mean, the beginning was good. The middle was and you kind of lost me at the end. So I'm only going to be reading part of it and summarizing the rest of it. So let's begin. I wake up crying, knowing that today is the day James is going to be leaving for a camping trip. Why am I so obsessed with this boy? I mean, we're both only 12. Why am I only 12?
This isn't creepy at all.
I shake the thought of him making me go crazy, knowing I won't be able to watch him and make sure he's safe while he's gone. I put on my clothes, walking over to his house, scared that he already left. I move over to the corner of the house, watching him put all of his gear in his car, his white skin shining in the Arizona sun. I look at the trunk of the car, open and filled with gear, and out of pure desperation to always be with James, I quickly run into the trunk of the car, hiding under all of James's stuff.
That's very impressive for a 12-year-old.
My eyes widen, not regretting a thing. I hear the car start before driving off. I get excited before grabbing one of James's duffel bags, opening the bag, and looking through. My eyes widen, seeing James's underpants before taking it. I will cherish this forever, I say, holding it close to my heart. So then we arrive at the campsite, and the stowaway runs out and hides behind a tree, watching me and saying, Now's my chance. He will notice me. But then, for some reason, she falls asleep. She sleeps for the entire day, and then when she wakes up, she goes through my tent and finds all my Axe deodorant. Which, I'm just gonna point something out, I don't like Axe deodorant. Come on, get your fanfictions right. And then she says, Senpai smell. I say with joy, just spraying a little as the scent of James washes over my body. I let out a soft moan before craving more. Then, for some reason, it switches to both of us in school? Like, if you want to write a semi-erotic fanfiction about stalking me, go right ahead. But at least make the story make sense. It's seventh grade, and I have followed my senpai everywhere. I go the look of him driving me crazy with lust every time he talks to a girl, the anger driving me crazy. So then she ties in the part where I give my first comic I made to a girl. Sick reference, bro. So I give the comic to the other girl, and then the girl in this story says, Senpai! But I couldn't get mad at Senpai. I was only mad at the girl. My eyes widen, grinning, following the girl, watching and waiting. So then I think she steals the comic. And then we go back camping? For some reason? Keep your story straight, man! I wake up already knowing James is going to be gone again, on another camping trip. I lurk on top of the trees. What? On top of the trees? A few hours pass before I wake up. You just woke up a few sentences ago! To already find everyone there and unpacked. My eyes widen before seeing James on the cliff. As I scream, knowing he could hurt himself, I bite my nails, watching, screaming with each jump. I must help Senpai! Then she ties in the time when I pushed Harris off a cliff in one of my older videos. It was into a lake, okay? I didn't just push him off a cliff, okay? We were cliff diving. Then I think I save her from...